The Mincing Rascals are sponsored by Kelly Cruises. Imagine yourself aboard the most luxurious ship ever built. Come with me, John Williams, and not Eric Zorn, but my wife Brenda will be there on the brand new Regent Seven Seas Explorer with large rooms and the largest suite balconies at sea. The Explorer is large enough to offer 9 different ways to dine, but at 750 passengers, this ship is cozy. April 23rd, next year, we're going to sail the beautiful blue Mediterranean. This will be my third time there, and I tell you, it is spectacular every single time. We go from Barcelona to Rome. We explore Spain, France, and Italy, and it's all-inclusive. So once you get on the ship, you don't need a nickel for shore excursions or wine, beer, spirits, gratuities, food. Everything is included. It's our 10th trip with Kelly Cruises. We all become friends, and a lot of you travel time and again with us. I'd like that to include you. So enjoy special savings if you book by the end of this month, including a $500 per suite shipboard credit. The number to call is 630-990-1111, 630-990-1111. Today is Thursday. It's June 22nd, 2017. It's 11:12 in the morning, and I'm John Williams. The Mincing Rascals, a weekly podcast we record at the studios of WGN Radio. Portions of this can be heard on my Saturday morning show at 11:10 on WGN.
I'm Steve Bertrand, the host of The Business Lunch on WGN.
I'm Scott Stantis, editorial cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune, creator of the Prickly City podcast right here on WGN Plus.
And I'm Eric Zorn, the illustrious Tribune columnist, Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sundays.
You sound like the put-upon columnist.
No, you know why I say that? Because the guy who's running, for, John Stewart is his name. He's running as the Libertarian candidate. He's a former professional wrestler.
Yeah.
And he went as the illustrious.
What's he running as?
As the illustrious.
What's he running for?
Running for governor.
Governor of the state of Illinois.
And I was thinking I want to be the illustrious, and now this guy's got this nickname, and that's why I'm sounding sort of down.
Well, maybe you guys get in the ring and we decide.
What's the name? Okay, this is going to sound really completely uninformed. What's the name of the woman who was on Trump's show? Oh, I think her
Omarosa.
Name was Omarosa. Is she invited the Congressional Black Caucus to meet with the president, and she signed it the Honorable Omarosa.
Oh, did she really?
That was a big controversy.
Omarosa Manigo.
Because she didn't reach, she's not at the honorable level when it comes to
government officials.
I have a
problem with politicians being referred to as honorable.
You have one?
I have a problem in general with it. Yeah, I think you. It's something that you, it's a title that you earn. It's not a title that you're automatically conferred by the office.
Well, your office would be congressman or madam president or something like that.
Not madam advisor. That doesn't get honorable.
All right, let's get started. So lots of ground to cover today, guys. Maybe we should start with the last news first, and that is the 6th Congressional District in Georgia goes to a Republican. Eric, the Democrats can't seem to win if Donald Trump's really the person we're voting for or against. What's going on
here? It was a very big disappointment to Democrats. I think they oversold their chances in that district. It was a fairly heavy Republican district. Tom Price, the HHS secretary, who was the congressman there, won by, 24 points?
Yeah, but
in November.
Trump only won by one.
Trump only won by one. So this election was fairly local, I think, that the Republican voters voted for a Republican congressman. Democrats put a lot of chips in on that. They put a lot of money in.
A lot of emotional chips
as well. And they lost. The only, silver lining, I guess, for this is, first of all, in all of these special elections, Democrats are overperforming than they did. Which, you know, it's like saying, yeah.
Go ahead. Give yourself that.
We're rebuilding.
I'm going to give you that.
You say what it takes to make you feel better.
Something else that makes me feel better, which is that in 2009, the Republicans did not do very well in special elections. There were a series of special elections just like this in 2009.
Yeah.
The Republicans did not do well. And then in 2010, they just kicked the Democrats all up and down Congress. So
this proves that Donald Trump will be reelected in a few years.
David Gergen said he's going to win reelection yesterday, just because he wanted to be, I guess, in the news for some reason. What a stupid thing to say.
That
he's going to be reelected?
That's what I just said. Yeah. Look, we've talked about this. This was the seat that the Democrats had to win. It was highly educated. It barely voted for Trump, even though it went dramatically for Price, the member of Congress, these are the seats. If they're going to take over the House, they have to win. And they put, you know,
yes,
both barrels blazing or whatever the metaphor is. And they lost, and they lost by more than the polls were showing they were going to.
Yeah.
Democrats, so no one gets it. No one got it when Trump was elected. Maybe no one's going to get it all the way until he's reelected.
I don't think this was an election about Trump, though. I really don't.
Of course it was. That's the whole way it was.
Breakfast
framed,
is about Trump.
But actually, it wasn't framed as an election by Trump. Ossoff, the challenger, did not.
In the district, it wasn't.
In the district, it was not about Trump. In the district, Ossoff stayed away from bashing Trump, and the winner, whose name?
Handel,
she stayed away from saying, I'm going to go there. If you like Trump's agenda, I'm going to be there to support him. Neither of them made Trump that big an issue. Again, I'm not trying to spin this as anything positive for the Democrats. They took a licking here. They've taken a series of lickings in these.
Well, did you see the editorial cartoon in today's Chicago Tribune?
Brilliant. I don't look at those.
Scott, you want to?
Was it amusing?
You want to describe it, Scott?
It was just a thing. And this is where the Democrats are having serious issues. It's a big game with a mallet, and it says whack a Trump, and the Democrat donkey's on its butt again, holding its head, going again, and out of one of the holes is Trump with a big mallet.
He's whacking them right back, and he keeps winning.
They're going to have to learn at some point that this is what this has become, is you can't run against, you know, hate against somebody that's not a very good platform for someone. And it also presumes that people who voted for Trump are bad, stupid, misogynist, racist people. And you keep calling them that, they're not going to vote for you.
Again, I don't think this election was about Trump. I think it was a strongly Republican district, and the Democrats thought that because Trump did not do well there, that they could make a game.
But Eric, okay, I get that.
Republicans have held that seat forever.
It wasn't about Handel. I mean, the election wasn't about Handel, you know, the candidate who won. And I understand what you're saying.
No, I think it was.
I understand what you're saying, that in the district they campaigned in that way. But come on, breakfast is about Trump. Lunch is about Trump. Everything that goes on in this country right now.
But if you're a voter in that district.
I think if you breathe in this country, it's kind of everything is
think
a little
Trump-ish. Think about that. You are the only person in the country, if you live in that district, who gets a chance to vote against Donald Trump, to figuratively throw him out. You could have done it.
And you didn't.
Oh, and you didn't. You didn't. In an urban, well-financed, affluent district, you didn't.
Right. But I think what it's showing is that party identification remains really strong. And, you know, I mean, Ossoff underperformed Hillary Clinton.
Ossoff also wasn't from the district.
You're not telling me that Donald Trump is more popular in that district than he was.
He could see the district from where he lived.
He had a wedding dress there, so apparently.
I'm sorry.
He was in Chicago.
Really, do you guys, I can't believe that matters. I get it. Trump even tweeted it, but I'm sorry. The guy lived 2 miles out of the district. They didn't bring him in from Washington.
Well, it didn't
State.
Help.
It didn't help. Fair enough.
Well, the Democrats are going to have to pick better candidates. I mean, and when
right,
they,
he's a novice. He's a complete rookie.
And when they've come back, when the Democrats have come back, like was it 2006 when Rahm Emanuel engineered the big comeback, they went and they picked candidates for the district. The guy they ran in Montana, was it? Montana.
Right, uh-huh.
I mean, he was kind of this flaky guy. I mean,
he was a singer.
It showed sort of this poor bench, this poor ability to find people who are going to fit the district. I'm not sure that a 30-year-old political novice who doesn't live in the district was a really smart, strong choice. I'm not saying another candidate might have won, but again, I think you can read too much into this. Trump's poll numbers are still really low. They're like, 36-37% approval ratings?
Yeah, but there's people like you or me or somebody, Eric, who think Zippy the Squirrel should be able to beat Donald Trump right now.
Well, that was a Democratic mistake, and it remains a Democratic mistake.
Hmm. Okay, so let's go from there to I don't want to talk a lot about the health care bill that we are literally, as we speak, just getting a chance to read, unless you guys want to say something about it now. But the Senate has a version of it. Any highlights jumping out at you?
I just think we should stop calling it a health care bill and call it a tax bill. That's what I think. Truly, I do. You know, we've talked about this. I think Obamacare did all of these long-term sorts of things. We're going to encourage this policy because it will make people healthier. We're going to, you know, invest this way because long term it will take down healthier costs. I don't think what we're getting out of the Congress now really has anything to do with the long term health of the country. It has to do only with how we're paying for it. So I think it's a tax bill, not a healthcare
bill. Tax breaks for the rich, and you're taking away.
I don't mean taking away
the tax on the wealthy.
That might sound partisan or whatever, and I don't really mean it to be. I think really it has nothing to do with the health of this country, the way Obamacare, whether it failed or succeeded, had to do with long-term health goals.
Well, go ahead.
Do you think that Obamacare had enough time to prove its value, you know, good or bad? Was that a fair run? That was a fair litmus test for the efficacy of Obamacare?
Well, I'll say no, because a lot of this stuff was long-term goals. It certainly had enough time to prove its flaws, you know, and it did that very well.
Yeah, it needs to be propped up, no question about it. I think it could be fixed if they wanted to fix it. The Republicans don't want to fix it. They want to destroy it. This is a tax break for the rich. It's not. It is going to cut coverage. We'll see what the CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, says when they score this thing. But they said that the House bill was going to cost 23 million Americans health care. What, this is maybe 20 million? I mean, it's not that much different. There's some little changes and tweaks in there, but it's not that much different. Trump said he wasn't going to cut Medicaid. He's cutting Medicaid.
Yeah.
This bill is going to cost people their health care. And it's hard to believe that they're going to look back on this with any pride.
And they're going to look back at this and say that we defunded Planned Parenthood for a year. Yeah, and that's kind of weird.
That's weird. That is very strange.
That's a Senate financing.
Those are long-term health goals. That's what I'm talking about.
Speaking of our health and the government looking out for it, here in the great state of Illinois, Cook County is going to, on July 1st, impose on its citizens a 1 cent per ounce sweetened beverage tax. That 99-cent 2-liter bottle of soda will now cost $1.63 because it's going to be 64 ounces, 64 cents on that. $1.44, Eric Zorn, you pointed out in your column, on a 12-pack of soda. And that big 20-ounce or the large-size soda that you get at the McDonald's or Burger King is going to go up about 32 cents.
A 20 ounce is going to go up 20 cents.
Yeah, right.
But the thing that I found in reading over this ordinance is that because if you add ice, if you go into the thing, ice, you know, you're not getting 20 ounces of sweetened
soda.
Beverage.
Yeah.
You're getting maybe 15 or something like that, but you're still paying the 20 cents because the tax is going to apply to ice.
Can we cap and trade then? Can we apply that extra tax we paid to our next drink or something?
Good question, Steve. Good question.
Thank you.
The local retailers will do the accounting on that, by the way, because SNAP recipients will not have to pay this. At least that's the current interpretation of it.
So, at grocery stores,
grocery stores, right. But, I mean, so if I come through, I have to pay $1.63. If you come through with your SNAP card, you don't. And it's up to the local retailer to figure out who pays what, how, when, where.
Well, it's not hard for him to figure out who pays the tax. What's going to be hard for him is that the retailer under the current system has already paid the tax. At least I think. I mean, they're tweaking this thing as we go along. The retailer has already paid the 20 cents per ounce tax when he puts it on the shelf. So he needs to get a refund from the distributor, who then needs to get a refund from the county.
Oh, good Lord. Yeah, that's not complicated at all.
It's a very difficult situation. And then so he's got to keep track of, okay, I bought Gatorade from this distributor, and I bought Red Bull from this distributor, and I bought my vitamin water from this distributor, and I'm going to have to get refunds from all of them. It's an incredible nightmare.
This was brought up in a meeting we had earlier, Eric and I. And can this be rescinded? Because this is a bunch of garbage. I mean, this is nanny state gone nuts. This is a greedy money grab. I mean, it's everything that's bad about Cook County politics.
Scott, in the words of Toni Preckwinkle, and I read Eric Zorn's column to her in part the other day, the Cook County Board President.
She likes that, I'm sure.
Good. I know. I thought, oh, this is obnoxious, but it was succinct.
Not the column, his reading it.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's what I mean. It's soothing tones, and then she's breathing heavily. She's
good government costs money. If you want good government, you have to be willing to pay for it. This is a way to pay for it.
Well, okay, I'm still waiting for good government. So, Tony?
That would have been obnoxious.
Yes, well, it's true.
Well, you know, I mean, I haven't looked under the hood of Cook County finances, but Preckwinkle has cut costs, and when she was in talking to the editorial board about this, she was saying that this is money that we need for health care and public safety and you know, things like, you know, public defender's office and so on, and they feel like they have cut as far as they can cut, and they need this revenue. Now, you know, I'm not going to referee that here. The idea that this is a nanny state thing, yeah, I mean, it's a sin tax, basically. They've decided that sugary beverages, which is really most of these laws, like Mexico has one, Berkeley has one, go after sugary beverages. Philadelphia
has one.
Philadelphia has one that's a sweetened beverage thing, and that so you don't discriminate between Diet Coke and regular Coke, which is probably its own nightmare. But I think the question you asked was, or somebody asked, Scott, can they rescind this? And they can. They can either rescind it or they can delay it. I think they have at least one more meeting coming up, the Cook County Board. I think it needs to be delayed until they can get some of these bugs out of it in terms of implementation.
I would sure think it would. Like, if you guys saw 99 cents for a bottle of Diet Coke on the shelf And then the next day, it's $1.63. Do you still pick up the two-liter bottle of soda?
Oh, don't forget, they tried to hide that. This is one of the things about this bill, is they tried to put it on the shelf instead of put it on your receipt so you can say, it says, you just paid X amount of dollars for the tax.
Oh, so, they didn't want it to be included in there?
Well, the answer to that in general has been that there's a significant reduction in the number of people at stores where they have these stacks and buying them. I mean, like 40%, I think, was what they've seen in Philadelphia.
It's amazing.
Also, so, I mean, and people may either be buying more Twinkies and Ho-Hos, or they may be doing their beverage shopping across the border.
Or, she says, Tony Preckwinkle says, you're going to buy milk, you're going to buy water, you're going to buy less expensive beverages that aren't affected by the tax. You'll shift your consumption.
What's disingenuous about this, in my mind, about Tony Preckwinkle, is if you recall when she first ran her first term as county president, she ran against Todd Stroger and ran against the Stroger tax, which, by the way, she reasonably cut back. Over the time, her term in office, she has brought it back. And now it's back in exactly where it was when she took office all those years ago. She's announced she's running for a third term. They have plenty of money, Eric. This is another example of...
I don't know that they have plenty of money. I mean, I don't know why you say that as though it's a fact. I don't know my county finances. I don't know that there's a lot of waste in county government anymore. I mean, I think she has been pretty good on cutting costs.
She's been okay, but she's cut pensions, has she? She's reined that in, because that would be news.
It's like the state of Illinois, though. If there's not a lot of waste, then there's just too much service. I mean, we cannot afford we're doing.
She doesn't have a lot of leeway in her services, right? This is all about health care.
She said it's like 87% of it is.
She runs the jail. I mean, the county...
County hospital.
The county hospital. They have, the county sheriff, things like that. I mean, the county is this sort of shadowy government, but it does run things. It does operate things, and a lot of what county does is directed at low income people.
Okay, so do you support the tax, Steve Bertrand?
Well, I support most taxes, so yeah, I don't have a problem with the nanniness of it. You know, if we're gonna raise taxes, why not raise taxes in a way that might have a positive health impact as well? So I'm not that up in arms about it. Although my Diet Coke has gone up quite a bit.
It will go up.
It already has it here. I think
You think they're already implementing the tax here?
God, I hope so. I hope they're not going to add a tax to what they're charging now.
What are you talking about, Steve? It's going to go up
in the vending machine?
There's a new vending machine down here, and it's $2.15, I think.
For what? For a big
20 bucket? Ounce.
Are you kidding? It's $2.15?
Think about
that. And if that's 20 ounces, it's going to go to $2.35.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. They might have already put it in.
Wait,
maybe not.
This is diet, and the taxes are going to go up on this?
Yes,
the sweetened beverages.
Oh, good Lord.
Right, so actually...
frankly, and you know what? I drink too many Diet Cokes.
Preckwinkle's job to fix.
Yeah.
The idea that we're drinking too much sweets and that's too many calories and too much sugar. Okay, but if it's a diet soda.
Well, you're asking me what I think. And so would I rather pay an across-the-board increase that would focus on, raise the same amount of money, or would I rather have to pay extra for this Diet Coke and think, you know what, I don't need another Diet Coke. I'm going to pass. Hey, good for me. Thanks, Tony.
Yeah, and now you're not paying your share of the tax either.
If they find out that's true, then they'll tax non-sugary drinks.
There's also some job effects going on. These distributors and retailers and stuff may have to, because it's actually a phenomenal amount. Like 10% of grocery bills, in some studies I've read, are these sweetened beverages.
Yeah.
And so if that gets cut back, then revenues drop at these stores, revenues drop for these distributors and so on. I mean, I'm not opposed to the idea of I'm not opposed to like cigarette taxes or alcohol taxes. In general, I think this one is too steep. I think it's like it's going to shock people. I understand the rationale that says, well, we need the money, and also it helps, maybe help us pay for some of the health care costs. It'll maybe diminish some of our health care costs because obesity, diabetes and so on that are related to sweetened beverages. I love
how they trot those numbers out, though. If we do this, we'll save $173 million in health care costs over 10 years like that.
I don't believe that.
Who came up with that number? I'm sure there's a formula, and I'm sure it's a well-intended person, but I think that's kind of hocus-pocus. Speaking of numbers, this is the number that caught my eye in Monique Garcia and Kim Geiger's story in the Tribune today. No rest from bickering as lawmakers return to work. So we have a special session in Springfield, right? And it sounds like they're going back and forth on this this budget bill, and here's the paragraph that catches my eye. Republicans called on Madigan to take up the budget proposal they released last week, which riffs off a plan passed by the Senate Democrats in May. It includes $5.4 billion in new money by increasing the personal income tax rate from 3.75% to just under 4.95%. And the corporate income tax rate will go from 5.25% to 7% in Illinois. I'm just so frustrated by how the income taxes are going up in this. You know, forget 99 cents on a bottle of soda or, you know, 64 cents. That's a significant increase in the state's income tax.
It's still lower than most of the taxes that are from states around us.
Oh, hooray.
So, well, and, I'm saying it's not like it's a shockingly high number, right? You know, and especially since it's a flat tax, which is its own problem. Flat income tax. A state like Wisconsin has a graduated tax. Iowa has a graduated tax. They go up to like 8 and 9%.
I think if you ask most Illinoisans, are they paying enough in taxes and are they getting their money's worth, they'd say yes and no. And the idea that, don't worry, it's just going to go from 3.75% to 5%, that's not that much.
Well, you could you
as
could,
a percent, that's pretty high.
That riff would get you a gig on WIND, where this is what some of the hosts there are hammering on, the idea that we don't need any tax increase, that we can balance the budget without it. And that's just absolutely not the case.
I can quote the great governmental leader Tony Preckwinkle, if good government costs money.
Yeah.
And that go back to what Eric wrote.
Really? So you guys are cool with this?
What Eric wrote a couple weeks ago about how, right? Tell me what you wrote a couple weeks ago. No, but about spending in state government in Illinois is actually pretty low when you compare it to other states.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's actually quite low. And Illinois is not a high spending state, and also our overall tax burden per capita, you talk about GDP, isn't noticeably high. What's happened is that for a long period of time, we've been spending more than we've been taking in. So we've got these enormous deficits. We've got this huge pile of bills we can't pay. This pension debt, which is just unimaginably high.
Yeah, so if you ignore all that, we're just Jake.
We're not even on the right path. I mean, you can get back on the right track and start the slope back up toward solvency. Right now, we're on the downward slope, and we've got these two bills. We've got the Democrats' bill that was in the House it was in the Senate that Rauner said he would not sign, and he was running ads attacking the people in the House, threatening them basically if they voted for this that they were going to be portrayed as puppets of Madigan. And then you've got this bill that they're portraying as a compromise, which is basically Rauner's ideas. It's the Republican agenda. They want that bill passed, and they're just butting heads right now.
But an income tax increase is a job killer. It's a population killer. The state's hemorrhaging people already. This will just accelerate that. So yeah, you know, the last person out, can they, you know, turn out the corruption? To even consider a tax increase for a state government that is this dysfunctional is criminal.
But you know what else is a job killer? Is all this uncertainty about what the tax rates are going to be, and also when you're sucking dry mental health care, when you're sucking dry state institutions of higher learning, upper education, when you're killing human services, you're making it in transportation now isn't threatened because the road fund they're not going to be doing the road projects. You've got a state that's falling apart. That drives people away too. And when you're bleeding education,
right? But when you have leadership in place that has not addressed the pension issue, which is now in the hundreds of billions of dollars of obligations that it's the only state practically in the union that has not addressed this issue in a reasonable or grown-up way, because the unions won't allow it, and Mike Madigan won't allow it.
Well, the Constitution doesn't allow it. That's the problem.
Exactly.
They have tried. The legislature has passed some changes to the pension laws, and the courts say you can't do it because the state constitution from 1970 says that you can't diminish or impair pensions fund. I mean, it is a real block to them doing anything. And even the proposal that's in Rauner's budget right now, Rauner's proposal, even that proposal, which he's counting on to save X billion dollars, that may not pass constitutional muster. I mean, this is a big problem.
But it has been decades, and this issue has not been addressed in a grown-up, reasonable way. And so why would I want to give those people my money?
Don't you think, though, that when it is addressed in a reasonable way, it's going to require more money?
Yeah.
I think it's going to require them selling us on the idea that this is, you know, we fixed it. over the long term, which, you know, where are the statesmen? We don't have any. It's election to election now, apparently. But if you had someone or a group of people who said, here's a solution, yes, and you sell it to me and say, in the short term, we need more money, but in the long term, we're going to diminish the money it's going to take, yeah, then yes, of course.
It's this fantasy, and I wrote this week about what happened in Kansas, where Brownback was elected in 2010, and he said, you know, I'm going to cut taxes for everybody all across the board. It's going to be a big shot in the arm and a big bunch of adrenaline in the state's economy. It's going to boom. Well, Kansas, you know, went from like the 12th highest income per capita to like a 38th or something like that. I mean, they just like – Kansas got into a world of trouble. Their schools were threatened to close early. They had all kinds of problems. Finally, the Republicans in their legislature said enough is enough, and earlier this month they voted to raise taxes because they realized that Brownback's little idea wasn't working, that it does cost money to run an efficient state government. And, you know, California's doing real well. Their tax rates are a lot higher than ours. Well, states that – Minnesota's where you came from, the tax rates are higher there. And these states are running better. So when you get on the right path, people don't mind. I hear the frustration in Scott's voice. I don't think people mind paying taxes if they feel that it's going toward things that they need to go for, and it's being spent well.
That's the truth about Minnesota. They see the money, and they've got a surplus, so it's a completely different animal. But you actually don't hear people complaining about high corporate or income taxes in Minnesota. It's a well-run state, you know. Why I moved here, I have no idea.
Like, yeah, welcome.
By the way, speaking of moving here, I just want to run this by you guys. There's a story that I'm not exactly sure why is running in DNA Info, because a statue was put up in 1997 in Edgewater, which depicts a sort of handsome Abraham Lincoln. Have you seen this one?
Wow. No,
it's a young one. His shirt's unbuttoned. He's looking off into the distance. He's got a book in his hand. It's a 13-foot tall bronze statue. It's the sexy Abe. He's sort of... He would be a candidate for The Bachelor or Bachelorette.
Yeah,
this.
Like,
he looks awesome.
Dreamy Abe, yeah.
That compared to the Abraham Lincoln, which is in front of the Tribune Tower or adjacent to the Tribune Tower when I move back here.
Oh, God.
You've got Abraham Lincoln there. It looks like Abraham Lincoln. This one's about 50 feet tall, standing next to about a 40-foot tall Matthew Broderick character. I don't know who he's supposed to be, but it's a guy with a sweater with the collar underneath and the white sneakers.
And khakis, yeah.
Who is that guy? He's every man, right? And Abe's
sure.
Showing him the way. Does everybody hate that statue? Does that thing look ridiculous?
As I can say, as an artist, you know, that the plaza has always been since I've moved here, been a center, had some kind of public art. Usually the same guy, right? He did American Gothic, the painting from the
Institute. Monroe, yeah.
He did Marilyn Monroe, and everyone loved seeing the underwear. And now this. And the first
I didn't
two.
I love seeing the underwear.
Well, I did.
I love the whole
statue. Well, it was facing my office, so I got to see
a lot of people got their pictures taken under the dress. Let's
yes.
just put it that way.
Yeah, but this thing, for those of you who have not had it's supposed to be Abraham Lincoln handing someone from 1990, apparently, I'm not sure why 1990, but that's who it is, a copy of the Gettysburg Address.
Oh, is that what that is?
That's what it's supposed to be. That's how it was explained in the Chicago Tribune. Whether or not you can believe that rag, I don't know. But that's how it was explained. And it's so the guy, the 90s guy, you're right, looks like flummoxed Matthew Broderick.
I've had so many people come up to me and say, I was at a client meeting the other day, and we're walking back with a client after having had a cup of soda, and they looked up and go, what is this? What is going on here?
One of my funniest moments ever in Chicago since I've lived here is they had, like I said, American Gothic. Tons of people were having their picture taken underneath the sculpture. My wife and I went to the Art Institute where the actual painting is by Grant Wood, and there's not a single person near the painting. Not a single person. It's like,
why don't you get your ace producer, Elif, to get the artist on the phone and explain himself or herself?
What the what?
I will do that. It seems to me like I'm a little late to this game or conversation, so maybe everybody's already sort of made their peace with it or not. I just wanted to
when you started
you guys.
Describing the statue, I was thinking, no, that's Nathan Hale. I'd forgotten, you know, it's not even in my head, that Lincoln statue.
Here's a statue.
Is the Lincoln statue, the buff Lincoln, is that controversial, or are they just writing about it?
I actually don't know why they are writing about it, to be honest with you. It just says it's an attractive statue, and I'm looking for the newsworthy hook on this, and I honestly don't see it at dnainfo.com. Although, here's the statue they should do. Remember the now iconic photo of the Cubs celebrating, jumping into each other's arms, Rizzo in the air, or was it Bryant in the air and Rizzo holding him? That would make a great statue.
Yeah.
If they put that up there, there would be very long lines of people.
Like the Iwo Jima guys raising the flag, but Cubs dogpiling on the
We did Marilyn Monroe. We could do this.
It's a good
okay,
idea.
Let's do our recommendations for the week.
I want to start in Highwood, Illinois. Highwood is, if you have been, everyone been to Highwood? No?
Yes, I have not.
It's a great little town. I grew up in a small town, and where I grew up, you know, the doctor lived next to the plumber and the janitor. Everyone was, it was a cohesive sort of group. And around here in the suburbs where I live, in city neighborhoods, there's not. There's those people there and these people there, you know, and sort of, Highwood is very cool because it's an old Italian village town just north of Highland Park, now with a sizable, maybe majority Mexican or Mexican-American population, and a middle class and all these sorts of people. Well, they are very good at doing festivals. They just have all year round, they have great festivals. And during the summer, on Wednesday nights, they have the Gourmet Food Market. And it's just all of these different vendors from around the area, and people gather in the public square. There's a band. Last night was the first night I was there for the summer. There were probably 200 or 300 people, kids running around, and just sort of the way summer's supposed to be.
Nice.
So I recommend the Gourmet Food Market in Highwood, Illinois.
I recommend the Old Town School of Folk Music's Square Roots Festival, which used to be the Folk and Roots Festival when it was in Wells Park, and now it's moved on to Lincoln Avenue. It's July 7th through 9th. A lot of free acts, a lot of good music happening there, a lot of fun. I'm going to enter myself this year in the Midwest Fiddle Championships.
Oh, no kidding.
I'm not favored to win or place. But
yeah. You know, those polls can be wrong here.
That's right. Polls can be wrong. You never know. You never know. I'm not going to be like a Democrat and think that this is my big chance.
What day and what time will you be performing?
Oh, that's Thursday the 6th. It's the
Thursday
night
the 6th of July.
Yeah, are you running as the anti-Trump fiddler?
At what time?
The Fiddle Championship starts at 6:30.
Okay.
And a lot of entrants, fiddle and banjo. So,
how long will you be performing?
I'll do one song.
3 minutes. Something
so, yeah,
like
my
that.
Son came in second last year, but fortunately he's out of town, so I can.
Did your son win a national competition?
No,
too?
No, he finished second in the Midwest last year. So.
Yeah,
still,
wow. Congrats. I will listen for Eric. How about you, Scott?
I've got two. One is a friend of mine, Rabbi Jonathan Miller, from a temple of all places in Birmingham, Alabama, has come out with a book called Legacy. A Rabbi in a Community Remember the Loved Ones. And it's a series of his eulogies. And it's fascinating because it talks about people who lived through the Civil Rights Movement in Birmingham, Jews. And some of them were very active. Some of them were like, oh, whoa, whoa, let's just keep our heads down and stay out of this. It's coming at history from a very personal and very different perspective. So it's worth it. I gave Elif the link for your people. You can go to ourtemple.org. But the local thing is, and I've said this a million times on this podcast before. I'm going to say it again just because the concerts in Millennium Park are starting. And John, you have to join us because it is the best time. We have a table in a bag. And we bring it there and we lay out our tablecloth, wine, bread, cheese. And the vibe there, it's 100,000 people sometimes. And yeah. It's just laid back. No one's shooting each other.
Yeah. I'm sorry to hear you say that, but I'm glad to hear you say that.
It's wonderful. You really need to, if you should, anyone should go. They have them throughout the week, different like jazz and Latin music. We go Friday nights, which is the Grant Park Symphony Orchestra plays. So
I strolled by there the other day. This is one of my recommendations, and it was in Millennium Park on the Great Lawn. And I didn't even know they were doing it that night, but they were doing Blues Brothers. They're showing Blues Brothers on a big screen, couple of big screens, yep. And the lawn was full. All the way to the back, it was full of people sitting there with their picnic baskets, watching off in the distance. The audio isn't great because of the circumstances.
Everybody knows anyway. Right?
You don't care. You don't. You can do the lines yourself. It's the Blues Brothers. What a great Chicago classic and a great venue.
And I'm going to disagree with you slightly and say that the audio is when you're underneath that little spider web of speakers,
right.
It's very good.
Oh, really? It works because I was on the side. I was on the perimeter and I was kind of getting a bounce.
Yeah, if you're not under it, then it's not good. But if you're under it, it's fantastic.
I'm going to insert the title of this book because I don't have it in front of me.
Harvard psychology professor Steven Pinker wrote this book. It's called The Better Angels of Our Nature.
I've been reading, and I'm only 30 pages in, and the book's about 600 or 700 pages long. But I noticed it's on the New York Times bestseller list again, having come out a few years ago, and I just thought it's interesting that there it is. And it's a book by a Harvard professor who says that we are living in the most peaceful time in human existence. And you think, oh my God, we're all shooting each other in Chicago, and there's wars, and it's just a terrible time of violence. And in fact, the human species has never enjoyed more peace and calm than it enjoys now. And then he walks you through everything from early man to ancient Greece and Rome, biblical times. I've been reading his description of the Bible, and oh my God, there's no more violent book than the Bible. Never thought about it in those terms. And then he walks you into current time, and it's really well done so far. So I'm just going to recommend, if you got 600 or 700 pages in you and you want to sort of be enlightened, that in fact it's not as bad as it feels at times, this is the book I'm looking at right now. And that's this week's Mincing Rascals podcast. I'm John Williams. Eric Zorn, thanks for coming in. It's always a pleasure to see Eric. Scott Stantis from the Chicago Tribune. Steve Bertrand from WGN Radio. Our engineer is Ben Cortez. The Mincing Rascals are produced by Elif Garris. I'm John Williams. We'll drop another podcast on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can also listen online on the WGN Plus app or WGNRadio.com. Just click on the WGN Plus tab. The Mincing Rascals podcast is a presentation of the WGN Plus podcast Network. You can also catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.